Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today marks the final week of the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride. On July 24th, a group of activists from both coasts began a cross-country road trip to battleground states where abortion rights have come under attack. They've been to North Dakota, where new laws are set to shut down the last clinic in that state. In Wichita, Kansas, they showed solidarity with those who reopened the clinic of Dr. George Tiller. That's the doctor who was shot and killed in his church on May 31st, 2009. And this past weekend, they were in Jackson, Mississippi, home of the only clinic in the entire state. One of their main messages is abortion on demand and without apology. They say compromising and messages like safe, legal, and rare are not working. So what do you think of that message? 2011 and 2012 saw a record number of abortion restrictions. 278 bills have already been introduced this year. 97% of rural counties have no abortion provider, and five states have only one clinic. So what do you think should be the message at this point? What about the tactics? Groups like Planned Parenthood and NARAL steer clear of the abortion on demand and without apology message, and both groups declined our invitation to join today's show. But we are joined today by David Gunn Jr. He's one of the organizers of the Freedom Ride. He spoke at this weekend's rally in Jackson, Mississippi. On March 10, 1993, his father, David, was fatally shot three times in the back by Michael Griffin, a member of an extreme anti-abortion group. According to a piece in the New York Times, just a couple days after it happened, Dr. Gunn simply wanted to deliver babies. But then an abortion clinic asked for his help, and because no other doctor would do the job, performing abortions in the rural South became Dr. Gunn's life. And defending abortion rights then became his son David's mission. And David joins us on the road. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, where are you currently?
I'm in Birmingham.
In Birmingham. Okay, so you're off in the next state, Birmingham, Alabama. Well, thank you for joining us. And we're also joined by Liza Fuentes. She is a board member with Reproductive Health Technology Project. This is a research organization that looks at messaging on this issue, specifically in the Latino community. Hi, Liza. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, David, you wrote a lengthy piece about why you decided to join the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride, and you put a lot of thought into it. Can you talk to us about why you ultimately decided to join?
Well, I have been somewhat inactive, you know, kind of following the issue and developments from the sidelines for a few years. I'd say probably 10 to 12 years. And after Dr. Tiller was killed, that was sort of a wake-up call for me. And then as I watched throughout the 2012 election and then where we are right now in 2013, how there have been so many efforts to restrict access to abortion, that I felt like it was time to, you know, get a little more active again. And I heard about the Freedom Ride from some friends of mine I've met with and talked to, the coordinating group, and Sansara Taylor, who's really been the inspiration for and behind the whole Freedom Ride itself. And, you know, we started planning, and, you know, now it's reaching its conclusion. And it's been a very effective event. I think it's drawn a lot of people's attention, especially to the states where abortion rights are at their most, or at most at risk.
You raised actually quite a bit of money in a short amount of time, just over $22,000 through the crowdfunding website Indiegogo to take this trip. And as I said, you've been to North Dakota, Wichita, Kansas. You were just in Jackson. You're now in Birmingham, Alabama, which is actually interesting when you think about the March on Washington 50 years ago. Talk a little bit about what this experience has been like for you.
Well, you know, to be clear, I attended the event in Jackson. I was not on the ride proper as it made its way through the country. But, you know, I've known the owner of the clinic in Jackson for 20 years, Diane Derzes. And what really drew me to that clinic in particular is Susan Hill was the prior owner of the clinic, and she's subsequently deceased for health issues, nothing related to abortion clinic violence. But my dad worked at a clinic in Columbus, Georgia that Susan owned. So I'm from the South. My family's from the South. Again, I've got a lot of personal connection to that clinic. You know, the issue has been a very personal issue for me for years and years, and I felt that, you know, I needed to be there to support the clinic, support my friends, and make sure that the culminating stop on this Freedom Ride was really the large event that it turned out to be. I mean, we drew over 100 people in Jackson, Mississippi to support abortion on demand and without apology, and that's a pretty significant feat, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on that message, David? Because that is the main message of the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride, abortion on demand and without apology. Why do you think it's important to embrace that message?
Well, I think that the prior message, you know, that was really the 90s message that Bill Clinton and others advocated, the safe, legal, but rare. I mean, it almost sounds in a subtextual manner that, you know, abortions aren't safe, and they are. I mean, it is a safe medical procedure, that they should be rare. Well, I mean, you know, the only person who should decide the scarcity or not is the woman who's facing that situation, not the government, not, you know, a minister, not a religious organization, certainly not terrorist groups who consider themselves quote unquote pro-life. And, you know, I think that the right to choose means that you have the right to choose and to have an abortion when you feel it's appropriate, and when the circumstances, your particular circumstances, show that that's what's needed for your health.
And that is David Gunn Jr. He's one of the organizers of the Freedom Ride. He spoke at this weekend's rally in Jackson, Mississippi on March 10th, 1993. His father, David, was fatally shot 3 times in the back. His father provided abortions in the rural South. And we're also joined by Liza Fuente. She's a board member with the Reproductive Health Technology Project. This is an organization that looks at messaging on this issue. And Liza, first off, what are your thoughts on the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride? A number of activists from the coasts going to battleground states where it's incredibly difficult to obtain an abortion.
Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks for bringing up this topic. You know, I think that in my work, the work of Reproductive Health Technologies Project, and I'm a board member, but I also am an activist and an organizer and a researcher. I think in the end, our job is to build a movement to support women's choices to have an abortion or not, to have a child or not, and support the rights of everyone to have the family that they want to have. And insofar as this is an effort that's raising awareness, that's organizing folks that wouldn't normally have an opportunity to do so, and that's allowing people to participate in one of the most important debates right now, it's a good thing. It's important that we do it. It doesn't mean that this particular form of organizing is one that's going to reach all of the people that we need in order to create a vision of reproductive freedom and justice for the entire country.
Well, what about the messaging? I mean, it's really interesting to look at, you know, abortion on demand and without apology. What are your thoughts on that specific message?
Well, you know, I think it's important to think about what it is we're trying to do. We need to talk about abortion in a way that's informed by our long-term goals. That includes repealing bans on insurance coverage for abortion. That includes increasing the opportunity for clinicians to train in this important procedure and provide it in their practice. This includes the ability of women to have the knowledge to understand where they can go to have an abortion and the resources to get one if they want one. I think the question really is to think about if a woman's struggling to make ends meet, if she's trying to raise a family, if she needs medical resources and social resources to make the best decision for her, what is the way that we can talk about abortion from a policy, a very, very personal and community perspective that's going to achieve that goal?
Well, David, what has the response been as you go to these battleground states? I mean, we're talking, you know, small clinics, and these people are putting their lives on the line every day just by going to work. I mean, especially when you look at the people who reopened the clinic of Dr. George Tiller in Wichita, the doctor who was assassinated in 2009. What are you hearing from grassroots activists on this message?
Well, it's been, our message and the effort has had some mixed results from different locations. You know, everyone faces their own sets of, circumstances, causes, conditions, if you will. And in Jackson, we were warmly welcomed. We worked very closely with the clinic. I mean, the actual event that we did, the protest event, was on the clinic grounds in front of the clinic on State Street in downtown Jackson, Mississippi. We had a very successful event with a lot of local contribution and local support. You know, in Wichita, the local support was there, but not so much so from some of the more established organizations. And, you know, they tend, it seems, and, Sansar and I wrote a piece that addresses this issue, that there is, in some instances, a message divide and a tactical divide insofar as approach is concerned. Are we going to take a more lay-low approach and rely on, judicial rulings and lobbying, or are we going to take a more active approach, try to build a national effort to draw people's attention, to draw people out, to get people on the streets in support of a woman's right to choose an abortion? And I think, if you look at it in a historical context, the latter, getting people off their couches in the streets and demonstrating, has always been a very effective method of achieving change and building a movement, whereas lobbying behind the scenes and awaiting judicial orders, while sometimes can have short-term tactical gains, is not what you need to build a long-term viable movement.
Liza?
I completely agree. And I think it's important to remember that what gets people into the streets is the way that we speak to their values and what matters to them. The choice isn't whether to lie low and lobby or bring people to the issue or make entry points for them. The way that we talk about abortion has to speak to our long-term goals, and that's how we get people into the streets. That's how we get them off the couch. And the only way to do that is to talk to people themselves, center the needs of women and what they say to us, and connect that to abortion and talk about a way that matters. You know, people care about poverty. They care about whether or not a family is struggling to make ends meet. They don't think it's fair that a person can't get the health care they need just because of how much money they have. Families really, really care about whether or not politicians in Washington are trying to interfere with their personal decisions, whether it be through health care or where their kids go to school. And so when you talk about abortion in a way that connects to the world that we really want to see, which is one in which a family can make the decision that's best for them.
Well, let's get to the crux of the issue here, because, I moderated a recent event that celebrated Roe and celebrated choice, and it was in San Francisco, and the organizers wanted it to be very family-friendly with a celebratory tone. You had a lot of government officials speak, doctors, women who've had abortions, and I noticed that there were a group of women holding the signs, abortion on demand and without apology, and I know that they wanted to speak, and they were not invited to speak, and this is in San Francisco. So, what are your thoughts on that, Liza?
You know, I wasn't at the event, but I think it's important to remember that when you're building a movement, you have to decide for yourself who you want. We have to decide for ourselves who it is that we want as part of that movement. And my work that I can speak to is organizing in Latino and immigrant communities, ensuring that women of color take leadership roles in a broader movement for reproductive justice. And when you come from that perspective, we know that talking about abortion has to connect to much longer-term goals. And so if abortion on demand is a message that works for some women, that's great. But our work is really centered around bringing people to the table who normally don't feel that they're able to talk about this issue because their feelings are much more complex about it than whether it's abortion on demand or not, right?
How would that message go down in the Latino community?
Latinos' experiences with abortions can be different than what we hear on the day-to-day on the radio, right? We have a political way of talking about abortion. But just like all communities, we know women who have had abortions. We've had unintended pregnancies ourselves. And what Latino communities believe is that we can't make that decision for somebody else, right? We don't feel comfortable making such an important decision for another person. And from that perspective, it's important that if a woman needs to have an abortion for whatever reason, but particularly if she's struggling to make ends meet, if she has children that she's already trying to raise, that she's able to make that decision, and we need to support policies that mean that women can make decisions for themselves. And that's something that Latinos identify very strongly with. We're not here to make decisions for other people about what's best for them.
That is Liza Fuente. She's a board member and activist organizer with Reproductive Health Technology Project, a research organization that looks at messaging on this issue, specifically in the Latino community. And we'll talk just about your strategies for organizing the Latino community around abortion rights in just a couple minutes. We're also joined by David Gunn Jr. He's one of the organizers of the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride. They've been on the road for the past month going to battleground states where it's incredibly difficult to have an abortion. David spoke this past weekend in Jackson, Mississippi. They've got one clinic in the entire state. He's now in Birmingham, Alabama. On March 10th, his father, David, who provided abortions in the rural South, was fatally shot 3 times in the back by Michael Griffin, a member of an extreme anti-abortion group. And we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the messaging and the tactics? The slogan for the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride is abortion on demand and without apology. So what are your thoughts on that message and tactics like taking the judicial approach and lobbying versus drawing people out on the streets and, well, as a lot of group activists on the ride say, stop being so nice, stop compromising. Terms like safe, legal, and rare are not working. We need something that goes further than that. So what are your thoughts? How do you make this an all-encompassing movement at a time when this year alone we've seen 278 pieces of legislation to restrict abortion? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, David, what are your thoughts on what Liza said in terms of trying to reach the broadest coalition possible, specifically the Latino community around these issues?
Well, I think that if you want to try and reach a broad coalition of people, you've got to first start by being honest about what your goals are. And, you know, if you're not honest, people are going to sense that, and they're not going to feel connected, and they're not going to get involved. If you are honest in how you approach engaging people, if you are honest in how you describe what your goals are, then I think more people do come out, more people do connect, and more people get involved. And I mean, and regardless of, you know, the branding message, if you will, you know, the long-term strategic goal is the same. You know, everyone, I think, wants to preserve this right and wants women to have access to clinics. There is a slight difference in opinion of the best way to get that message out to a large group of people. I'm not saying that there's not a place for lobbying and involving politicians. Certainly there is, and it's an important part, but it's not the only way. And if that's the only action that you're taking, then you are excluding a tremendous amount of people and a tremendous amount of resource from your movement. I mean, if you're not talking to the people and being honest, if you're solely focused on a legislative approach, then you know you're not going to have a national movement that's needed, and a national movement that's needed to take the shame out of the abortion word. And I think that's a very important point. I think that's the reason why abortion on demand without apology is a fairly honest and powerful slogan, because women should not be shamed because they were shunned because they decided that you know, ending a pregnancy that was unwanted, or because of, for health reasons, they shouldn't be shamed and thinking that's an awful thing. I mean, that's their decision, and, you know, it's no one else's business.
Well, let's hear from listeners on this before we go to break. Let's go to Cynthia in San Francisco. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much. First, I wanted to thank David's family for its sacrifice for women's right to abortion. Thank you very much for that. And, unfortunately, I can't support abortion on demand after the fetus is viable. I have a very, very strong 24 weeks position, and I think that should be the message of pro-choice people. Emphasize that pregnancy is a severe physical burden and carries significant physical risk, you know, not to mention its financial and social risks, but also support Roe v. Wade, which did provide for the 24-week split. You know, make 24 weeks, make supporting Roe v. Wade the message. You know, join around that, gather that, because I think that's a very powerful message. And I think it would also speak to people who do recognize the right of, fetuses who are viable. Thank you.
So your focus would be on Roe v. Wade. That would be the main message.
Roe v. Wade and supporting that and getting its message out. I mean, that's literally what the Supreme Court justices ruled, that up until 24 weeks viability, women had complete freedom to have abortions. And then at that point, states could decide what they wanted to do. And I would support that full force. I think that's a very wise decision that recognizes both the woman's right to bodily autonomy as well as the rights of viable fetuses.
Well, thank you for calling in. On the 40th anniversary, which was this year, of Roe v. Wade, a new study came out by NBC and the Wall Street Journal. 70% of Americans said that this ruling should stay, one of the highest percentages in history, actually, at a time when we're seeing so many pieces of legislation to restrict access. David, what are your thoughts? Cynthia believes the focus should be on Roe v. Wade.
Well, a couple of points I'd just like to make, and I don't disagree that we need to support Roe. Of course we do, but the 24-week threshold, I think, and leaving that up to the states, you know, there are certain inherent problems in allowing states on their own to decide a whole many number of issues, but especially in light of all the attacks that abortion clinics are facing these days, allowing latitude in the states, well, I think will only lead to further restrictions. The zoning restrictions that they're pushing through in Alabama and Mississippi right now that require clinics to have the same architectural design and, you know, hallway width, you know, just one example, as a surgical center, are onerous and are causing and will cause clinics to shutter and will certainly curtail women's access, and it has nothing to do with the 24 weeks. You know, the fetal heartbeat laws that were passed in North Dakota and that have been passed and on the, you know, verge of being passed in other places. That's 20 weeks. So I mean, you know, I think the question becomes when, if you're going to say, women shouldn't have an abortion after X. What is that X?
Well, and hold that thought. Hold that thought, David. We're going to take a quick break. Today we're talking about the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride and abortion more generally. What should the message be? What about the tactics at a time when we're seeing almost 300 pieces of legislation introduced this year alone? What are your thoughts on the message moving forward, and what do you think is most effective? This is your call, and we'll be back after this.
I invite you to join in today's program. If you have a question, idea, or experience to add to the conversation, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or simply leave a comment there, yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about how California's energy market is regulated. Last week, the state reached a $750 million settlement with Canada's Power X. Attorney General Kamala Harris said the company gamed the state's market by buying electricity and then selling it back at a huge market. So who are the players in our energy market in California? And what has changed since the Enron scandal? And then on Wednesday, we'll have a conversation about what makes a good charity. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about messaging and tactics around abortion rights. This week marks the final week of the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride. Activists from both coasts have been traveling across the country over the past month to battleground states where it's incredibly difficult to have an abortion. This past weekend, they were in Jackson, Mississippi, where there's one clinic in the entire state. Today, they're in Birmingham, Alabama, and we're joined to talk about this by David Gunn Jr., one of the organizers of the ride. On March 10th, 1993, his father, David, was fatally shot three times in the back by Michael Griffin, a member of an extreme anti-abortion group. Dr. Gunn performed abortions in the rural South. That became his life's mission. And we're also joined by Liza Fuentes. She's a board member and activist with the Reproductive Health Technology Project. They're a research organization that looks at messaging on this issue, specifically in the Latino community. And if you'd like to join us, we have actually full lines. We'll have one open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts on the messaging? What do you think about the ride's message, abortion on demand and without apology? They say compromising and messages like safe, legal, and rare, which were embraced by the Democrats, are really not working. So what will work at this time of 278 laws on the being introduced this year alone? What should the tactics be moving forward? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We did invite Planned Parenthood and NARAL to join us, but they both declined. We should note that, and I'd like you both to actually comment on this. NARAL used to be an acronym that stood for National Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League. But in January of 2003, the organization changed its name to NARAL Pro-Choice America. So they stopped using abortion in their name. And Liza, what are your thoughts on this? This is pretty significant.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't part of that decision. And I'm not sure what NARAL felt at the time was important for them. But I think it's now 10 years later, and what we need to be focusing on is what is the way in which we can engage people about abortion that speaks to their values and gets them to understand what's really at stake. And in some ways, very black and white messaging may make people feel like their concerns aren't being acknowledged. But in fact, abortion touches everyone's life. And so if we talk about how their personal decision making, how their experiences, how their concerns about their health and other women's health connect with abortion, we've found that we have a lot of success.
So what is successful in the Latino community when you talk about abortion?
Well, I think in the Latino community, first of all, is extremely diverse. We have a big country. We have immigrants who have come here recently, who came a long time ago, first generation, second generation. But I think a common thread is that when we do organizing in Latino communities, it's not just about abortion, right? Your average person, their day-to-day concerns have to do with a whole range of reproductive and sexual health issues and what's going on with their kids and their families. And so really centering community organizing and movement building around the ways in which people want to see their families grow and be healthy is the starting point. And from there, what we know is that Latinos want their children to be healthy. They want them to have good relationships. And we don't feel that we can make important decisions for other people, including abortion. And from that perspective, Latinos support access to abortion and abortion rights, and they support a medical establishment and a culture in which we treat people with dignity and respect and give them the safest, best services. And abortion restrictions compromise women's health by making it take longer to get the services they need, including abortion, by denying funding. And Latinos support access to timely, safe services, and abortion restrictions are directly oppositional to that.
Well, we've got an email from Sue about messaging. She says, I've long had issues with the poor messaging of the pro-choice movement in recent years and agree that we should take an unapologetic stance even while we often have to put out all these legislative fires aimed at decimating access. I think we need more women of all stripes active in the movement, whether or not they've ever had or might have an abortion or have chosen to have children. One way to do this is to speak to this being an issue of women's rights, that this is an issue that should be important to all women. I also think we need to get away from allowing the opposing side to use the term pro-life, or at least we should not echo that term. They're anti-choice, anti-woman, anti-freedom. And those of us who support a woman's right to choose already know there's nothing pro-life about them. What do you think of emphasizing this angle, and what other messaging would you suggest? David, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. I mean, I cannot agree more, and I've been saying for years that, you know, we made a strategic blunder, we as a movement, by allowing those that are against, that are anti-women, that are anti-choice, that are really focused on controlling women's lives, because that's what this is all about. When in the final analysis, it's about control. It's not about babies. It's about, you know, controlling women's reproduction. It's about keeping women in their quote-unquote place, the place that a whole patriarchal society deems appropriate. But I mean, to get back to the original point, I think we made a huge blunder by allowing the other side to co-opt life. I mean, if anything, they are anti-life. And when we debate on the terms of pro-life and pro-choice, we are kind of cast on the side of, well, if you're not pro-life, then what are you? Are you pro-death? I mean, and that's absurd. Nobody is, you know, I'm not pro-death. I mean, I would describe myself pro-life. I get up every morning and breathe in air and exhale air. I eat food. I have a family. I try and keep myself healthy. I try and keep my children healthy. I mean, that's pro-life, is it not, in a sense? So, I mean, they are the ones who kill people. I mean, really, let's be real. Let's get honest. They're the ones who terrorize people. They're the ones who made wanted posters of my father. They're the ones who stalked him. They're the ones who shot him in the back. They're the ones who killed Dr. Tiller. They're the ones who killed the two women in Brookline, Massachusetts. And, you know, the list goes on and on. There have been 8 murders on their side against doctors and clinic staff since 1993. It's a small group, but it continues to grow. And, you know, we do not do an effective job calling them out about the inherent contradictions in their movement. And we tend to fight it on their terms. Hmm. And I agree very strongly with what the emailer had to say.
What do you think about that, Liza? Do you agree that the reproductive rights movement tends to use that their language and fight this battle on their terms?
You know, I think what's important to think about really is what do we want to see happen in the long term with abortion, and not just abortion, but the ability for people to make any family that they want. And if you think about that, there really is no compromise between using messaging that speaks to people, that really speaks to their hearts and what they want for themselves, and compromising our values. We don't have to use messages that compromise our values in order to be in dialogue with people. You know, we talk about things being safe, legal, and rare, or pro-life. And I agree, these are messages that fundamentally, or these are ways of speaking that fundamentally don't bring to the surface the fundamental values that we have around our families, and that includes when and whether we should have an abortion. But there's no need for compromise. People want to talk about things that matter to them. They want to be able to make personal decisions without the interference of politicians. They want to be able to get access to medical care that's safe and timely. And those things are no different with abortion. And so having effective messaging that doesn't alienate people, that gets them thinking, that makes them feel that their values are being, that are being put front and center, that is what gets people in the streets. And there's no compromise that we have to make. There's no way that we should be talking about abortion in a way that somehow leaves an opening to restrict somebody's decision. But the idea that somehow that's the dichotomy here, that there are some groups that are willing to do that and some groups that aren't, is not the case. We're building a movement that supports abortion rights and reproductive freedom across the board by meeting people where they're at and talking about abortion in ways that informs our long-term goals. Repealing bans on abortion coverage, making sure that providers can get trained, and making sure that women have resources right in their community to get the abortion they need. And that's a lot of the work of what the Freedom Riders and other groups are doing. But they're not going to be able to build a movement by not speaking to people's values, co-opting the language of the civil rights movement, and not engaging the diversity of communities that have a stake in this issue.
So you think they're co-opting the language of the civil rights movement?
The question is whether or not they're alienating people by not listening to those who have that concern. I don't know if they are, but I certainly think that if they're going to use that language, then they should be centering the rights of women of color. They should be speaking to immigrant groups. And the language that they use may or may not do that. I don't know because I'm not part of the group. But our work is focused on listening to how people feel about abortion, getting at what their concerns are above and beyond the political dialogue. And what we've found is that it's completely possible to talk about an abortion in a way that informs our long-term goals, that addresses concerns that people have in terms of their values, making sure that they're able to make the best decisions for themselves and not feeling that they need to make decisions for others.
David, are women of color involved in the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride, and are you reaching out to immigrant groups?
Yeah, it's funny that was brought up because a number of the women that were on the ride are women of color. The clinic administrator of the clinic in Jackson, Mississippi, is an African-American woman. The Jackson chapter president of NOW, who spoke at the rally Saturday, is an African-American woman. The grassroots organizing group that we coordinated with in Mississippi, called Hell No Mississippi and Wake Up Mississippi, are both spearheaded and led by African-American women. So, I mean, yeah, we are reaching a broad coalition of people. It's not, that we're not looking at reaching to as broad a populace as we want. I mean, that's the whole goal, right, is to build a national movement. And we're talking to as many people as we can, and we're involving them. I mean, there were more women of color speaking at the event Saturday than there were none. So take that for what it's worth.
And that is David Gunn Jr. He's one of the organizers of the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride, which is now in Birmingham, Alabama. They were in Jackson, Mississippi over the weekend. David's father, David, was shot 3 times in the back on March 10th, 1993. He was an abortion provider in the rural South. And we're also joined by Liza Fuentes, board member with the Reproductive Health Technology Project. And if you'd like to join us, we'll have a line open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. Today we're talking about messaging and tactics when it comes to abortion rights. 278 bills have already been introduced this year. 97% of rural counties have no provider. 5 states have only one abortion clinic. And 2011 and 2012 saw a record number of abortion restrictions that are now on the books, and they're now being fought in court. So from here, what is the most effective message and the most effective way to go about, well, changing course, I guess is the right way to say it. What are your thoughts on this? You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And just protecting, this is a constitutional right. We often forget this, but protecting this constitutional right to have an abortion. Let's hear from our next caller. Let's go to Carly in San Francisco. Hi, Carly.
Hi. I couldn't agree with David's, the slogan that they're using for their freedom ride.
Abortion on demand and without apology?
Yes. That's really, to me, that just says, that says it all. David, I also want to thank you. I mean, I'm so sorry, for what happened to your father because of physicians like your father. At a very young age, I was able to have an abortion that I needed to have. And, you know, that was my business. That it's no one else's business what I do with my body, and I totally agree with you that it's a control issue. And it's so alarming to me to see all this hysteria that's going on. I mean, it's a very polarizing issue and always has been, but lately, like you said, what is it, 278?
Right.
You know, pieces of legislation that have, you know, that are trying to keep women away from not only an abortion, but just basic women's health care. You know, I just find that just, I'm at a loss for words. But you can see how strongly I feel about this, and I know that there are people on the other side who feel just as strongly, but I think that there's just such a hysteria, you know. I don't know.
Well, thank you so much. And David, I did want to ask you before we end the show, we've got about 10 minutes left, but since... you know, Carly spoke with such emotion about your father and just everything we've been facing over the past couple decades. This New York Times article about your dad said that he started out doing abortions once a week, but before long he was making the circuit of six clinics, driving 1,000 miles a week. A clinic would call and he'd say he would help until they found someone, but no other doctor would do the work, and so he was there forever. And he spent so much of his time on the road living out of hotels. What do you want to share about your father and what you remember about him and the work he did?
Well, I first started going to clinics with my dad when I was about 14 years old. I've grown up around the issue, around the clinic atmosphere. We lived in a very rural town in South Alabama. The closest clinic that he worked was probably 60 miles away. He would leave on a Monday, and, you know, he might not get back until a Sunday, and he was gone constantly. But that's the work that he decided to do. That's the career he chose, and, you know, he was helping people ultimately have access to a service that he felt was very important and needed. So, I mean, I have nothing but admiration for what he did. I don't resent the time on the road. I'm just glad that the time that I have with him is what I have.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Carly. And let's go next to Sean in San Francisco. Hi, Sean.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
As a male, I almost don't feel entitled that I should have an opinion in this, but I do support abortion on demand and no apologies. I think the compromise puts a woman at an inferior position to have to justify something that really nobody has a right to even ask what her justification is, whether she has a justification or not. If it's a moral issue, then it really comes down to the point when whoever is the gatekeeper, if there is one, that discussion happens then with that gatekeeper and that person and or the couple as to why and why they made that decision. And then at that point, that is it. And that's pretty much all I have to say. And thanks for the show.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Liza, what are your thoughts?
You know, our work around movement building means that people have different perspectives on why abortion is important to them. And the caller's view was, you know, his feelings. And not everyone feels that way. People feel about abortion that they're concerned that it's not safe. They're concerned that people don't have the full information. And if we don't speak to those concerns, we're not going to get to a place where those who would normally support access to abortion services can't, because we haven't spoken to their concerns and their values. You know, we can't make decisions for other people. We can't interfere with a woman's right to figure out what's best for her family. And until we start talking about abortion in a way that really respects and informs those concerns, I think we're not going to be able to build, as David Gunn said, a national movement in which our fundamental values around the place of women in society are that she needs to be able to make her own best decision without interference from politicians, and be able to have the resources to execute that decision. So that means that if her and her partner or if her and her family don't want to add to the family, that then she can go and have an abortion in a way that's you know, covered by insurance, that's easy to get to, and that she has a trained provider. And until we start speaking to those concerns, we're not going to get that warmth and that support, because people don't feel that they're being included in a movement.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Sean. We have a message from Natalie who says that my question, what is the most effective message, is simple-minded. She says the civil rights movement needed both Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, as well as the Black Panthers. The feminist movement had now, but also more radical groups, as does the LGBT movement. Having active and noisy participation aids the success of those who look more mainstream. The conversation could be enriched by expanding the complexity of the discussion rather than Rose continually polarizing it, which is not my intention. But what are your thoughts about that, David? Natalie's point is that we need all these voices in this movement.
Well, and I think that that's what our message is, and I think that that's what we had in Mississippi was, you know, a multi-ethnic, multi-voiced approach and rally in support of women's rights, the support of women's right to abortion. And, you know, just to echo what some other folks have said, I mean, I think that by being honest about what we seek and by dispelling the myths that the other side successfully spreads about abortion and its risks, that it's, you know, for crying out loud, linked to breast cancer, or that it's unsafe, or that, you know, it's linked to cervical cancer. I mean, all these absurd allegations that they throw out that no one challenges. I mean, we are speaking to that. And the fact is, one in three women have had an abortion. It's an issue that affects a lot of people. And, you know, there's nothing that we're doing that seeks on at face value to be exclusionary. And we want to be as inclusive as possible. And I think the best way to do that is to be absolutely honest with what you stand for, honest about the procedure itself, and honest in your defense against the attacks that are false.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Natalie. And the goal isn't to polarize. It's really to talk about exactly what you expressed in your email. That's why we brought on, a wide range of guests. We definitely wanted to have Planned Parenthood and NARAL on, but they declined our invitation. Let's go next to Charlotte Taft, who's director of the Abortion Care Network. They represent independent abortion providers and others who provide care for women seeking abortion. Hi, Charlotte. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for including me in this. It's been a fascinating conversation.
So what are your thoughts? Now, you do not represent Planned Parenthood clinics, but you represent the independent clinics that are on the ground, really, in a lot of these battleground states.
Yeah, and, you know, the way it looks is that in the past 40 years, the vast majority of abortions have been provided by independent clinics, such as the ones in my organization. And I'd like to just say a couple of quick things. I want to thank Liza so much for reminding us that although abortion rights are essential for women's lives, they are certainly not all that is needed. And in the olden days, I've been in this movement for 40 years, in the olden days, what we were seeking was a society that would provide health care and fair wages and child care and good situations for families, birth control, and, of course, legal abortion. So abortion is only a piece of what is necessary for women to have just lives and for their families to be healthy. On the other hand, abortion on demand without apology is at least a 40-year-old slogan. So I remember myself saying that one. Mm-hmm. The way I look at this is that there's a range needed, and I totally applaud the idea that all voices are needed. From the perspective of those who provide abortion services, it's helpful to remember that for many women, for cultural, religious, other reasons, abortion is a very complex and nuanced experience. So talking about the responsibility that women feel when they choose abortion, I think, is just as important as talking about their rights, not one or the other, but both.
And Charlotte, since you've been doing this for 40 years, we only have a few minutes left, but how did we get to this point? I mean, what went wrong?
Well, I don't think it's too complicated to notice. We weren't paying attention when a group of extremely right-wing people ran for state legislatures across the country and were elected on the platform of jobs and small government. What we didn't see, I think the people in my movement didn't see it enough to ring the alarm bells, was that the very well-funded and well-organized anti-abortion movement, which is really a very scary marriage between evangelicals, Catholics, and far right-wing politicians, that those were the people elected into state legislatures. And what we then saw was when you have a supermajority in a state legislature who has a particular perspective, you can't stop them. And that's why we're all of a sudden seeing all of these laws passed that really don't reflect the views of the American people, don't review in any way, don't deal with needs of women. They pretend to say they want abortion to be safe, and that's why they're enacting all these laws that are really only designed to make abortion unavailable. One important thing.
Sure.
More than 168 million Americans have had a personal experience of abortion, either the woman, the man, or someone who was a support person. 168 million Americans, that's a lot of people.
And Charlotte,
we need many messages to reach them.
And because you've been in this movement for 40 years, in 20 seconds, what's most effective moving forward?
I think we need every message. We need to reach to women who may have been shamed for their choices. We need to let them know that we know they are good. We know they're making responsible choices. We need to express the absolute right of women, as well as the responsibility of women to make good choices about their families. We need every message, and we need every kind of person to come out, and we need to say to women, someone stood for you.
And that is Charlotte Taft, director of the Abortion Care Network. Liza Fuentes is a board member with the Reproductive Health Technology Project. David Gunn is one of the organizers of the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How is California's energy market regulated? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the state's utility market. Last week, the state reached a $750 million settlement with Canada's PowerX. Attorney General Kamala Harris said the company gamed the energy market by buying electricity from the state and selling it back at a huge markup. So who are the players in California's energy market? And what has changed since the Enron scandal? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.